Welcome to Automates, the podcast that brings you musings from thought leaders and industry pioneers who are shaping the way we work, think, and succeed. Each episode is packed with insights, expert interviews, and practical tips that will inspire and empower you to take your business to the next level. So tune in, subscribe, and get ready to innovate with Automates. Peter, welcome to Automates. How are you, sir? You well?
Very, very good. Thank you for having me. Good to be on.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, I think this is, you know, you've seen a little bit of Automates. I mean, this is relatively new for us, but you know, we're just trying to bring smart and interesting people who do smart and interesting things together. And I'm not smart and interesting, but you, sir, are the smart and interesting one today. So, thank you for taking the time. Why don't you, for those people that don't know Peter why don't you just give a quick overview of where you are, what you do, what you like doing, and we can crack right into some good conversations.
Sure, sounds good. So happy to give a quick whistle stop tour, who I am, how I've come to be here, and what I do. Yeah. So I'm an energy engineer by background, so that's focusing on solar panels, nuclear plants, circuits, systems, all that kind of good stuff. But fell in love with software very, very early and decided energy engineering was not the route for me. So career fell into three chapters. First chapter, worked in technology startups for a couple of years with some good friends. So we set up a bunch of different ideas, web apps, mobile apps, focusing on online advertising, political canvassing, and energy conservation. After doing that for a couple of years, moved on to the second chapter, which was working with Deloitte Digital. So within Deloitte, worked for 5 years, helping large corporates to build out mobile apps and web apps in a bunch of different industries like sports betting, financial services, telecoms, and pharmaceuticals. So massive projects for massive clients used by hundreds and thousands of users. That was super cool.
Wow.
And after doing that for 5 years, then left into the third chapter, which was setting up my own consultancy called Titans. And so Titans is a boutique legal tech and AI consultancy focused on legal service providers and in-house teams. And over the last 5 years, we've worked with some of the biggest names and brands in the industry and focused really heavily on AI over the last couple of years, because that's what is the most important pressing topic for the key clients we work with.
It makes sense. So this may say a lot about the lack of prep I do for these conversations, but I had no idea about the first chapter. I had an inkling of an idea, but not the breadth and range of the second chapter. And obviously, I know you from the third chapter. I mean, I have a similar potted history of how I became Ben here today. But I've not done, it must be really interesting to be in that kind of Deloitte world where you're working with the world's largest organizations on massive scale projects and stuff like that, to which, I mean, legal does a little bit of that, but maybe not to the same kind of scale. So I think you must bring really unique perspectives to sort of usability, experience, what's important and everything else. So I know, maybe we'll dig into that, because that isn't on my agenda list or list of questions. But if I remember, we'll come back to it. I think you break a record. So I think it was about 2 minutes and 27 seconds or something. We mentioned AI because that's what everyone talks about at some point. But I think it's really interesting that referencing from your amazingly detailed and crafted newsletter that you produce, AI is a big part of it must be an obvious interest to you. You must use it in your day-to-day work and everything else, aside from consulting around it and everything else. Because you can tell that. You can tell from what you talk about and how you talk about it. Sort of, it's ingrained in your operational sort of, I'm Peter and this is how I work kind of thing, as opposed to I'm Ben and I talk about these things, and actually at home I'm a lazy person and I don't read and I don't look up things and everything else. So is it a big part of how you work, what you do? How are you leveraging AI outside of the legal tech world? What do you bring together? What are the things that you're enjoying, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So I use it constantly. I have various AI apps and ChatGPT others open all day on my desktop. I go through it today. And my home screen is, you know, all Gen AI products as well. When I think to use it, I kind of divide it into three different categories. So first is in my personal life. Secondly, within Titans to kind of within consulting. And then thirdly is how clients actually use it. And right now, the most exciting stuff, honestly, is in the personal life. So examples of how I use it, even for podcasts. So the podcast player that I use called Snipped, every podcast that I go to listen, it has already created chapters of all the podcasts. So I can see what are the contents of the particular podcast and jump to various different sections. It transcribes everything that I listen to. And as I listen to a podcast, I can just click my AirPods. It saves a snippet, like a 30-second clip of what I've just heard, and then pumps it off to a central database. So I have a knowledge repository of, like, at this stage, between Kindle highlights and podcasts and articles, of nearly 30,000 different little snips I have taken. And the tool that I use to store all that information is even just released now, Chat with My Highlights. So I've effectively built up a knowledge base over the last, like, I don't know, 5+ years of just taking this, like, curated knowledge that is now totally accessible with AI over everything I've ever saved from what I've read or listened to. So it's deeply ingrained in everything that I do. And I said that's just an example from the, like, podcast or knowledge management piece. But, like, other examples that, like, just blow my mind daily is, like, the one I like to give is, so my partner is a vegan and I spend most of my time in Amsterdam. And when we're in, if I'm going shopping there, I don't speak Dutch. So if I'm going to buy ingredients in the store, I have no clue what it's saying on the back of the packets. But I could just take out ChatGPT, take a picture and say, you know, is this vegan friendly? And the fact that this generic tool can now take a picture, it can extract the text from the picture that has been taken, can knows the concept of vegan and can assess whether an ingredient meet that criteria or not, is frankly amazing.
And translate the ingredients as well.
I try
not to swear on this podcast because I don't want to get downgraded or put onto some kind of other list of podcasts, but holy shit. Like that. So I've talked to people who use it for work, and this is sort of why I suspected, but I had no idea how influential it is on your being, almost, if that makes sense. So I use it, but I use it typically in a work context. I might use it to show my kids that I'm half intelligent, i.e. I'm not, I'm just learning something and spouting it back to them. But I think embedding it in that sort of knowledge product kind of scenario from podcasts and things you read and stuff like that, that's really interesting, because 90% of law is legal, is knowledge management. You know what I mean? It's like not 90%, but, you know, it's what have we done before? How can we do it? What does that look? How do I bring that knowledge back up to the surface for me personally? How do I spread that across my team? How do I curate it? All that sort of stuff. That's really interesting. I didn't realize the depth of which you've delved. That's fascinating. That's crazy.
Yeah, like, honestly, now how I view it, and the example that, you know, people give is that, like, when you are, you know, doing calculations with large numbers, you would use a calculator. You would not do that in your mind. It's getting to the stage of when you are working with language or words, why would you not use a tool that is so fantastically capable with language and words, especially for you? So, like I said, background as an engineer, I think in bullet points, I think in systems, I think in logical sequences, and being able to really easily convert that and support with text generation and refinement, it just is a massive asset. And it's then, if you think about it, within a business context and Titans, so whereas initially I would kind of see it mostly as like infinite interns, being able to do, you know, text wrangling tasks or take text out of images and all the rote, low value admin stuff.
Yeah.
But it's very quickly now moving up that, like, expertise scale to a knowledge and thought partner, where it's being able to ideate with it and seeing the quality of what we produce now being taken to another level. And I think that's one thing that people don't talk about enough when people talk about AI. People focus a lot on oh, you can get it, you can do things a lot more efficiently. But actually, the quality of the output that you can produce can be substantially higher. If you can view things from different angles, or if you can, like, say, spot gaps in your thinking, and just being able to have that immediate on-demand thought partner is incredible. So that's what I'm really noticing. And it's, for me, that was one of the biggest surprises actually recently, is that I did not think that it would have the impact on the quality of the output that it's having in the work that I produce.
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, I use it a bit. I don't use it a lot. Typically, when I'm trying to think of smarter ways to quite say things, because I'm not the brightest sort of pencil or sharpest pencil or anything, whatever the language is. But, you know, the idea that it's a thought partner is something that resonates with me, because even yesterday I was in London, sat on the train on the way back, and I had this idea for a marketing campaign around reverse psychology. And very quickly I went, reverse psychology, sort of, this isn't the process platform you're looking for, kind of thing. And I automatically went into Star Wars brain, because I don't know why. And I sort of looked, right, give me 10 statements that reference autologics, that reference sort of this, that would apply in this scenario for this kind of audience that uses reverse psychology to get them to think about different things. And literally in 15 seconds, I had them. And I was like, literally, I would have done that and it would have taken me an hour and it would have been half baked. You know what I mean? And it's not fully baked, but it's now there. And now I can, like, to your point, you can then sort of, the quality's there, it's quicker. And now you can refine the quality and apply it in that. I think that's the kind of stuff that I'm now using that kind of sort of service for and starting to think about. But we're not, it's like baking it into work product is probably, we're on that journey. I'm on that journey, if that makes sense. But yeah, no, it's an interesting sort of dynamic, very interesting dynamic. So one of my questions was going to be, your newsletter is glorious and is probably one of the most comprehensive newsletters around legal tech and AI that I've seen. And it amazes me that sort of you find, well, now I know the tricks, it's done, but sort of how you consume all of the information to record the right bits to bring it to the surface for people like me. Now you've given away your tricks. You've given it away how you're curating that kind of stuff and how you're bringing that together. But it's your newsletter is fantastic. I love it. But my question was going to be, how do you keep abreast of everything when change? I mean, everyone says change is constant, but literally everything is changing every day. It's madness to try and keep up with everything at the moment. How do you advise your clients and the people that you work with to sort of keep up to date, short of reading your newsletter?
Yeah. So firstly, on change, it is absolutely relentless. Like, things have never been moving this quickly. If you like, if you don't pay attention for a day or two or a week, like, things have just dramatically moved on. And honestly, how I advise clients to stay up to date, and this will sound like a little bit of self-promotion, but people don't need to do all this reading themselves. That you don't, like, what I do and what we do in staying on top of things, it is a full-time job. And unless people have that person within their organization who's staying on top of things, they won't be on top of everything. So rather than trying to do it side of desk, or in their spare time, or, you know, on the article, reading an article on the train home, whatever, like, that's not enough to stay on top of everything. So it's just so much easier to, like, work with people who do this, like, full time, and then support on that. Because if you're either hiring for it or you're paying someone else to do it for you, because you can't do it yourself and do your job. So that is a simple answer. If people want to try to do it themselves, yes, there's definitely automation that you can bake into it. So as an example, what I do for the newsletter, I effectively have feeds that is monitoring everything. So scraping information from all across the internet, pulling it into a central repository, being able to automatically tag it and classify it as it comes in. But it still requires the human input to determine what is relevant and what are the key points. So like I might, because there's a lot of headlines, there's a lot of news out there, and you can read a headline or you can read an article, and there's like one or two lines or one or two snippets that matter.
Yeah.
And the only way to know what really matters within all that content is to be deep in stuff and to be able to quickly filter through the content and have that lens of determining, okay, like this is you know, just a PR statement, or this is actually happening, or you know, what are the specific use cases here?
I love it. You're being so politically correct, but ultimately I sort of read the stuff I do read. I sort of, right, that's bullshit. That's press. That's this, you know, you sort of, you go through these sort of there is so much noise out there of either generated content by something like that, which isn't necessarily even reflective of what's going on, or it's sort of vendors tagging on to a new thing, oh, agentic, all this or whatever. And, you know, you start, it's like, okay, where's the value in all of this? Where, how do you cut through all that noise? And I think that's an interesting point. You need a smart human to work with the smart machines to cut through it, because the context and the understanding and the sort of, I don't know, the it's literally, your listeners need or readers need this much. You could give them this much, but actually the value is here. And actually it takes a human with that expertise and understanding to deliver that amongst all the noise, I guess. So humans do have value. That's nice.
Yeah, massively. So we can, I definitely see it as a case of technology can elevate humans and give us additional leverage in what we do. I definitely see the value, yeah, for sure. And I think, as an example, you know, there's a lot of content out there that's just generated by AI, or, you know, some newsletters just pumping out that's just pure AI, like fluff. And you can tell it just doesn't have the context. It doesn't have the insight. It hasn't been there, done that, tried to actually get people adopting technology, trying to actually deal with senior executives to see what matters and what resonates. There's just a lot of content just lacks the depth of that comes from the experience of doing it. And I think people crave actual that insight, and not just, you know, it's never been easier to pump out more content. And to your point, you need humans there to actually provide that insight that comes from the human experience.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the thing that people like you, and there are people in the industry, quite legal tech, legal sort of on the vendors or inside of firms and on the in-house side, that sort of are bleeding edge people like you that A, understand it, and B, sort of understand how these tools can be applied today to the right use cases, as opposed to, we could do everything or something, you know. And I think that's something that I'd like to dip into, in terms of, obviously, the third part of your sort of chapter is Titans and working with in-house and sort of some on the vendor side, but talking to that kind of identifying the right use case at the right time during this rapid pace of change, where models are changing sort of on a, what, new models are arriving on a daily basis, but models are getting updated and upgraded every sort of 2 months or whatever it is. How do you start to look at the use cases and how they apply to the business of law or the practice of law? And what does that look
like? Yeah, so on that, the technology is changing fast, but the best practices are still the same. So ultimately, you need to understand with any organization, whether it be law firm, ALSP or in-house, what are your objectives? What are you trying to achieve here? What are your existing ways of working? What are your processes? What are your bottlenecks and your problems? And really focus on that, as you would do with any kind of tech implementation. AI doesn't change any of that good practice. And even I saw a great post today from Jack Shepherd, who was talking about, you know, it's still focusing on, you know, what are the use cases, what are the processes, focusing on the all that good stuff. It all still like totally applies. yes, AI can now, some use cases can be achieved more easily because you don't have to go labeling hundreds of documents. It makes it a lot easier to do certain different stuff, but fundamentally all the best practices still apply. You need to have a discussion with those who are doing the work to understand, okay, what is it that you do? What are the steps in your process? What technology do you currently use? What documents are you interacting with? What are you producing? Who, what are the departments or organizations are you interfacing with? That's the upfront understanding of what is the process to which we are introducing technology. What are the problems? How will the technology fit into it? That all still applies. I think people can be very quick to hope and think that AI negates the need for all that, but that's not the case. Like within legal tech, one of our biggest problems is always adoption. Adoption is really hard in an industry where people's time is so valuable. You know, every hour is worth hundreds of pounds and hundreds of dollars. People are under extreme pressure to hit very high billable targets, or in the in-house world have mountains of work to get through. So given those constraints, it's really hard to bring in change, and AI doesn't change that.
I think it's sort of, it comes back to you mentioned Jack. So his colleague, Alex Smith, is always talking about the hard yards. The hard yards of any technology is the stuff that you do before you even touch technology. You know what I mean? It's sort of before you get there. And I think you're right. There was a hope that AI was going to be a magic silver bullet to sort of solve some of those hard yards. And it will, as you said earlier, it will help sort of elevate and improve some of the hard yards in terms of the experience and what you can do, but it's not removing them. And it's not removing the need to do them, particularly around sort of process. We spend a lot of time talking to our customers about processes and process orchestration, end-to-end stuff, like deep, gnarly stuff. And, you know, it's that kind of scenario whereby they go, oh, but you can just solve it. And I said, well, no, you still need to know what the process is so you can translate it to the technology. We might make things efficient and we might be able to solve for multiple things when you say, I want Bob to do X. It's like, but actually knowing what X is and where the handoffs are and what technologies that, so that we still need to understand that so that it can actually deliver what you want, as opposed to what I think there's been a whole, over the years, my past working at HiQ, but you look at a lot of point solutions, they are, I do this and it gives you that legal tech, buy me kind of thing. Whereas now, and I guess this is why you've embedded yourself in this kind of world, process technology. As an engineer, you are thinking about the process. You're thinking about the constraints, the attributes, the components, what it means to go from A to B, and then on to C, and then through to Z or whatever it might be. And I think that's the mindset that I think that a lot of technology over the last 10, 15 years has sort of taken away that critical thinking, that critical understanding of your business processes, because, you know, it sits there and goes, right, I'm a DMS or I'm a this or I'm a that. And they're all great technologies doing the thing they do. But actually, as soon as it needs to do something different or slightly different workflow, it's like, well, actually, we don't do that, or we have to think about it. And I think that's where AI comes in. That's where technologies like ours comes in, which is actually you can map to your process or refine what that looks like and sort of evolve that engineering type thinking, which I think is going to be more and more and more. I mean, the rise of the legal engineer over the last sort of 8-9 years, whatever it is, but they are going to be absolutely critical to almost all, or roles like that, critical to all businesses. You know what I mean? Particularly when we're talking law firms and in-house functions. I think that's obvious now, if that makes sense. The understanding and the technology and the process and then wrapping it together. But yeah, AI doesn't make it easier. All of it. It makes some of it, but not all of it.
You still need to do that upfront effort, and that does not go away. And people, if people appreciate that and understand that, fantastic. Because AI is incredibly exciting, and the appetite people have for it is great. That people are more open to change. However, you need to set expectations in doing that upfront work as well.
There was so this is one of those things, but I read a headline where an executive had basically made redundant or fired like 500 people from a business in the US because they'd licensed ChatGPT, and he thought that was going to solve everything, you know. And that was sort of 6-9 months ago. But you look at it and you go, no, the humans are still required. The business understanding, it's like you see organizations rushing into things at the moment and sort of putting that thin layer across the top and going, yeah, well, we've got that now, so that does that those functions. And then it's like, no, you're augmenting, you're not replacing, you're evolving. Business, I mean, ultimately, business structures and organizational structures will be influenced by the rise of technology and the rate of change in 5-10 years' time. There is no doubt about that. But it's not going to replace all humans. It's just going to, you know, there's going to be stuff that we... There's still going to be stuff for us to do. It's just going to be slightly different, I think.
For sure. And I think a few things come to mind. One is, firstly, organizations who announce that they're laying off hundreds or thousands of staff being replaced by AI. I think oftentimes that is a case of framing of the fact that you need to do redundancies or you want to cut people. And just a general market story of, we are an AI-centered organization, we are going to be so much more valuable because our cost structure is dramatically reducing, that you need to be mindful of, okay, well, you know, is this company going for IPO? What kind of story do they need in order to for the market to value them? So I'm always have a generally cautious of organizations that announce all these job layoffs are being replaced by AI immediately in the future. Who knows? Because for the here and now, super skeptical of that. However, AI is improving so dramatically that, and it's hard to predict just how fast it is improving. So could it be the case in a couple of years? Maybe. How many years? Really don't know. It's so hard to predict how capable it's going to get and at what speed. But for now, it's very much augmenting humans and supporting with specific tasks rather than end-to-end workflow and replacement of people.
Yeah. And I completely agree. I mean, I sort of sit there, and I'm an old human right now. And I sit there and I look at sort of the classic War Games movie that was out in the 80s with Matthew Broderick, where a computer took over and almost started World War III type thing. And you think, okay, well, it's hopefully that isn't going to happen. But, you know, you see the Terminator 2 kind of scenarios. I don't know. That's the fiction popular kind of thing. But things are changing so quickly that you're right. You just can't imagine what is going to be available in 6 to 9 to 12 months, maybe 2 years. I mean, I was chatting to somebody who's one of his best friends was a relatively senior exec in a big sort of electronics brand. And they've been making decisions to hold back technology products because people aren't quite ready for them over the last sort of 5 years. And now that's sort of changing because everything is changing so quickly. It's like, oh, we're just going to miss the boat if we don't do something now. And it wasn't AI related, but it was like, these are the kind of things that sort of we have to sort of think about. It's the impact on sort of everyday life is coming, but it's just so much change. So much. It's like, gives me headaches.
Yeah. And the like stuff that was just a dream is now a reality. And we're forever changing our view of what is possible. And even a good example I have from like a month ago, I was home with my family over Christmas. And there's a spelling game that we often play from the New York Times called Spelling Bee. And effectively it has a series of letters and in a visual. And you have to create a bunch of different words off and you get different points depending on how long the words are, etc. And I tried the new 01 model. I had taken a picture of just the, taken a screenshot, put into 01, then described the rules around the game and said, okay, create as many words as you can. And within 2 minutes, because I did a 2 minute thinking time, came back, got a higher score than me and my family had got working together for 20 minutes. So not only was it better than, you know, a single human, it was better than a team of humans, and it could do it 10 times faster. And you could say, okay, look, this is just a spelling game, or this is just words, and of course it's going to be good at natural language and words. But like, that's like, you, that would not have been possible a couple of years ago. And our benchmark and framing for what is, oh, run of the mill, and what is like exceptional, incredible, totally impossible, is changing so fast.
Yeah.
And we've been mindful of how we become accustomed to things and be like, oh yeah, of course it can do that. Whereas if we had seen that a few years ago, it would have blown our minds.
Mm. And I think that's very real. It sort of feeds into the whole adoption thing. There's a whole bunch of technologies improving so much, and the technologies that we're putting into the hands of lawyers and technologists and business users inside of law firms and other industries. You look at these things and you go, and there's people that still sort of send faxes in the world. You know what I mean? And these are the kind of sort of bounds and leaps that people are having to think about and making. And sort of, it still makes me laugh that I see a fax machine number on headed paper and stuff like that. I just think, yeah. Who's waiting for that beep, 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 beep little noise that comes through? It's like, is anyone receiving faxes anymore? But, you know, that's the kind of world. We've got fax machines over here, and we've got AI machines completing spelling bee in 20 minutes against a bunch of, if you're the standard model for your family at Christmas, you're all going to be bright. You're always going to be. And so these are bright humans doing that for 20 minutes and the system's still beating it. So
it's 10 times faster as well. Yeah it's
exactly. I got a couple of maybe some specific questions around some, maybe personal views of yours around sort of where the world is going and how things get called things and then how people sort of pick up on those things. So the whole agentic AI and sort of the definitions of that and how then everyone is agentic all of a sudden because everything is agentic because, you know, that's just a marketing buzzword rather than an actual thing. Where do you see that kind of, is that just creating more noise, or do you see real value in those kind of sort of definitions, views, and where do you see that sort of stuff going?
Yeah, so the promise of agentic is very exciting. The idea of having AI that can make decisions autonomously, take actions, and, you know, deliver outcomes, that is incredibly promising. However, I think such a broad definition and understanding is incredibly problematic at the moment. And the word is getting thrown around a lot. And I'd say in the vast majority of cases, it is for marketing purposes. When it comes to agentic, you know, there's two kind of main questions I ask people when they say that they do agentic stuff is like, firstly, okay, well, is the software following a set of predefined, determined rules? And if it is, it's like, that software, that's automation. You know, that is what we already have. Yeah. Like calling that agentic is not anything new. And if they say no, you know, it's making its own decisions, it's having probabilistic actions at each step. Okay, the next question is, if you are taking probabilistic actions, there's an error rate at every probabilistic step. And if you thread those together of 5 or 10 different steps, there's a really high chance that, you know, that error effectively will compound. And it's really hard to get predictable outputs and results from that kind of probabilistic multi-threaded hop. And then I ask, okay, well, if that's your case, what are you doing to, you know, mitigate against that risk of the multiple probabilistic steps? And invariably, the faces go blank of most people. So clearly, for the vast majority of people, like this, like it's a fundamental flaw or challenge of what you're attempting to do. And if you don't have a rock solid answer for that, you're in trouble. And there are some interesting folks in the market doing interesting stuff, but I would be hyper skeptical of the word agentic at this point, because it's been used for many different ways. Even things like some organizations who have the equivalent of, you know, a GPT or an AI assistant type thing, which is just, you know, a system prompt and some documents, and calling that agentic, it's not agentic. Like, it's the, I think it's so broad. And I think I'd like to, I hope people don't get too swayed by the marketing of, you know, agent and agentic. As I say, huge promise if we can deliver it in a predictable manner in the future. For now, it's very, very hard to do, and few are doing it well.
And I sort of, I completely agree. And it goes back to something that we were talking about 20 minutes ago or whatever, which is with the pace of change, there are technology buyers out there within law firms, within in-house, who are going to know, and a little bit like me, I know the right words. I can put them into a sentence. They might not all be in the right order, but I know enough to be dangerous. And so from a buyer's perspective, I can sit there and go, oh, so are you agentic? Are you this, are you that? And quite a vendor will go, yes, 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 yes. And because people can't keep up with the rate of change and the progression and everything else, people are just going to rely on the marketing. They're going to rely on asking. They're not going to have the experience that you've just outlined in three steps. Are you agentic? Are you this? Yes, no. Yes? Okay. How? And then why? And you, so, you know, most people don't have that experience and that understanding. And I think that's quite, is quite telling. I mean, the whole agentic stuff goes back to the whole thing anyway. AI is, there's like, I don't know how many different types of AI there are, but generative AI is over here. You've got all the other components, stuff that was running Kira before. That's all under the banner of AI. And but they are very different things with very different principles, very different technologies, different outcomes, different, you know, and you start to think about all of these things as they come through. And it's sort of, it's the layman that I don't worry about them because sort of I sleep at night and everything's okay. But, you know, it's like, it's the layman who sits there and goes, oh, well, yeah, I'm looking for this system to do that. And I've got a checkbox of things that it needs to do and it's done. You know what I mean? And you look at it and you... That's the sort of worry that I have with the noise that comes with it all, I guess.
Totally. And it's extremely hard for people to buy because there are so many new vendors in the market. And it's almost like as if you were to say, look at the legal tech landscape a couple of years ago and what we have now. The whole thing's been torn up and reshaped and refitted. And there's a blurring of... On the vendor side, the capabilities that they have. So vendors will cut across multiple different categories, whether it be pre-execution contracting or post-execution contracting, and moving into litigation, moving into it's there's all round blurring there, and also even the target customers. So whether they're going, you know, people who are going to law firms, also in-house, the whole market, the way I kind of frame it is like it's everything everywhere all at once. It's incredibly hard for people to kind of make shape of what is happening. And the thing is, the devil is in the detail with any tool valuation. Like a classic example I like to give is people, what is very topical at the moment is people focusing on bulk document review. We now, you know, applying large language models to that and how we can do it. Okay, great. Like that's an amazing use case that all of a sudden you don't have to do labeling of thousands of documents and all these different data points. And it's so much faster to get up and running. But all the old problems we used to have still exist. So for example, a lot of legal data is really old scanned PDFs with handwritten text, and you still need to have the core document processing functionality in order to handle all of those documents. And what happens if you misread one or the OCR breaks down for another? Like it's all those problems and all those challenges, they are still there. Mm. And all the new vendors who come into the market need to solve for those alongside all the other cool Gen AI stuff that can be done.
Yeah,
and definitely. It's hard at surface level for people to really evaluate when there's so much change happening and so many new vendors.
Yeah, definitely. And it's that. So I think there's a downstream to that as well. So everyone's racing to buy AI tools or tools that have got AI in them. But actually, almost all also creates paralysis around other buying processes that they're going through for other types of technology that might be more BAU and less innovative and everything else. And I think sort of there's that paralysis in the market. And I've talked about it for a couple of months now. It's like, in fact, I had a call this week with a US firm, and they said so what's AI about your tool? And it's like, nothing. We integrate with lots of, we're model agnostic. You can integrate a thing to do a thing, but there's nothing AI in our product right now. And it was like, checkbox, but a big cross in it. And it's like, you could almost see, it's like, oh, no, but we do use some AI. Oh, it's like, you know, in your brain, you're going, what can I say that's going to get us out of the negative box? Because we're not the sexy tool that's going to sort of save the world, you know? And it's like, that's the kind of binary sort of buying process that people are having at the moment. And it's very interesting from the vendor side to go through these kind of experiences, and sort of it really hones your messaging around what you're doing and why you're doing it and how you're doing it. And I think that's sort of, it's quite interesting, albeit a little bit painful, quite frankly, sometimes. But hey, this is why I have
funny. Yeah, it's very funny. I think there's many organizations in the market, whether it be law firms or in-house teams, have a very clear AI mandate. And there's people in roles who need to be able to point to specific pieces of technology that meet that AI need, so that they can report back on what has been delivered as part of that AI mandate. So I can totally see how other tools that don't allow them to say, yes, I have met the AI objectives, it's harder for them to get the airtime they deserve, because everyone is so focused that there's such a clear AI mandate from senior executive levels for everybody. Yeah. That's why it kind of seems most attention.
And that's why loads of organizations are pivoting or have been pivoting for 2 years, like putting AI at the end of their domain and stuff like that, because it's like, oh, we've got to have something. But anyway. So 5-6 minutes left, something like that. What's interesting that isn't AI? What are you looking around? What are you, the conversations that you're having now? I know a lot of the conversations you'll be having is AI related. I always think about sort of the people, the process, the technology. And if we sort of circle that over there, what are the things that you're sort of seeing that isn't AI related, that, or maybe directly related, that you're seeing businesses tackling and thinking about and what they're doing?
Yeah, so I will give the caveat that with Titan, so small, lean team of technologists, we focus exclusively on AI because that is our core. Yeah. So everything that we see is AI and focused on everything. But stepping back, because I know that's not the answer you're looking for. So what I will say is, if we think about not just AI, but what potentially is unlocked because of AI, so not just AI specifically, and things what's of interest to me, and that's coming more and more, things like voice-first interaction, that, you know, we had Alexa and Siri in the past, and look, they're not good enough. You know, it's, again, very narrow capabilities that they have. But now, because of AI, we can start to converse with technology in a far more efficient way. So we can speak far faster than we can type. Mm-hmm. And that latency between how we actually communicate and interact with technology can be dramatically reduced. And because, you know, AI is so good at interpreting, you know, unstructured blob of audio or text that it has and converting that into specific actions or understanding that, it starts to potentially unlock new ways of interacting with technology. And for me, that's really exciting. And you could say, okay, that is still AI. But it's a fundamental potential shift in how we interact with technology from, you know, with a mouse, point and click and type on keyboard, which has that kind of limitations, to a mode of interaction where we can transfer a lot more information faster. So that is really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, so the modality of it all makes a lot of sense in my eyes. I mean, I sort of, I'm going to go back to the AI thing, but I see a tremendous potential. And it's where we see things, but sort of everything is a human interacting with a chat interface. Not everything, but there's a lot of that at the moment, and it's sort of focused. And there's good reason for that, and there's use cases for that. But actually, you embed the same capability inside of a system that's managing a process, and silently the output comes in because the process knows and the system knows that at this point in time, we've got to do X, Y, Z. You don't need to interact with it. It's the same technology. You're just thinking of the process is being orchestrated and the system is using the capabilities that you've programmed. Say, right, go off and do this smart thing and bring it back. But I think that voice thing is really interesting. I mean, I don't use any kind of voice. I don't use Siri. I just naturally, my brain is like, okay, I'll just type it because that's what I do. I don't think, oh, Siri, tell me about this. Well, what's the weather going to be today? I'll never do that. Maybe I should. But I get it. It's sort of, it is tech, it is AI, but actually that is a transformative amount of time that you can sort of get back because you can impart so much more knowledge and instruction in through that sort of that mechanism. You've made me think. Exactly. You've made me think.
Because the thing with AI is as good as if we get to instruct it to do a specific action, it's highly, the quality of the output is highly dependent on the quality of the context that we give it. Yes. And when dealing with senior people, it's about getting that tacit knowledge out of their heads and into, you know, the context that the AI can then action. And what I love doing now is when interacting with ChatGPT using the voice notes feature, so I can just give a long ramble, here are my thoughts, here's the context, here's what I would like to do as a voice note, and then use that as the prompt rather than having to type it all out. And I find myself giving far more context when I can just speak it rather than having to type. So being able to get as much as my tacit knowledge out of my head and into the context for the AI to action, I find far better results as well.
Yeah, that's dope. I'm going to try and do that now. Next time I use GPT, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk to it and see what happens. Peter, this has been an amazing. I do these podcasts. I talk to typically people I know. That's why it's called Automates. And I come away from these things with like one or two little bits of snippets of things that I didn't know either about the person or about the topics they're talking about. I've literally walked away with like 150,000 things that I didn't know before, or I sort of knew at a level, but is now elevated. So thank you very much for taking the time. I think you're an absolute legend. And if you don't subscribe to Peter's newsletter, we're going to put the subscription bit as part of when we release the podcast. So you should subscribe, you should read it. And because it's carefully crafted and super, super important to keep up to date. Peter, you're a legend.
Amazing.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for the kind words. And honestly, the podcast you do, it's amazing. I love it. Listen to every episode and all great stuff. I know you always have super insightful people that I learn a lot from. So it's great to get the chance to speak with you as well. A lot of fun.
Mate, hopefully I will see you in person soon. I can't make it to wherever you are at the moment. You're sort of chasing winter sun, but I will hopefully see you soon in the next couple of months and we'll catch up for a bit.
Sounds great. Yeah, when we have no more sun in UK, I'll see you around.
Yeah, at some point. Like the end of the world maybe or something. Catch you soon, buddy. Take it easy. Thank you.
Cheers, see you now. Bye-bye.